Hey, what is up, beautiful people? Happy, happy Tuesday. It is November 18th. A bit chilly outside. Hope you all are staying warm in this mid-November freeze that we are currently experiencing. But hey, that's Michigan. What do you expect, huh? But we have a hot, hot show in store for you in contrast to the cold weather outside, folks. Today, we invite head coach of the Mason football team, Jerry Van Havel. Yes, Mason won its first ever district football championship this year, even though they lost into the Division III regionals on Friday. Still, an incredible ride. Jerry will talk about that incredible ride in just a sec on today's show. We'll also be giving you a preview of the Michigan State and Duke men's basketball game that will be taking place on the primetime stage at 7 p.m. tonight, and also give you our thoughts on how Michigan, yes, the Wolverines basketball year is starting, and we'll debate about who's in the college football playoff right now with a special top four Tuesday. All of that and so much more, folks, but as custom here on Current Sports, let's kick things off with your Current Sports quick hit headliners. All right, let's start with AP. Vikings running back Adrian Peterson has been suspended without pay for the remainder of the season by the NFL, who said they will not consider reinstating him before April 15th of the year 2015. Now, Commissioner Roger Goodell said in a letter to Peterson, quote, "The timing of your potential reinstatement will be based on the results of the counseling and treatment program set forth in this decision. You must commit yourself to your counseling and rehabilitative effort, property care for your children, and have no further violations of law or league policy." Again, that's straight from Commissioner Roger Goodell. So, AP, you would not get to see Adrian Peterson on the gridiron this season. Too bad, fantasy owners. All right, Justin Timberlake, we cover all bases here on Current Sports. Justin Timberlake, JT is what they call him, in excitement over a win, tweeted, "Grizzlies," after the NBA team defeated the Houston Rockets 119-93 last evening. Now, a follower of Timberlake tweeted back at him calling him a bandwagon fan. And how did Timberlake respond? Well, by informing the tweeter that he is from Memphis and also a part owner of the team. Now, you can check out that hilarious conversation on our Twitter page of @WKAR_sports. That's a funny story. All right. The number 19 Michigan State men's basketball team will face off against the number 4 Duke Blue Devils tonight, 7 p.m. on ESPN and also ESPN3. Blue Devils will bring 9 McDonald's All-Americans to Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis tonight for the 4th annual Champions Classic. The Spartans are coming off a shaky win over Navy last Friday. Let's see how they bounce back from that one. Oh, my Pistons. Oh, boy. The Pistons season has been certainly a roller coaster. Last night's loss to the Orlando Magic puts the team at 3-8 this season and 5th in the Central Division. Now, Greg Monroe had his first bad game of the year, scoring only 6 points, 2 of 9 shooting. Head coach Stan Van Gundy's thoughts on the game, quote, "Our inside game never really got going at all. That's an area where we thought we could do something, do some damage, and we didn't. Those guys just had a rough night," end quote, and it has certainly been a rough start to Detroit's year. Well, I tell you what, this man has certainly been tearing it up this season, and he set a career mark during last night's Monday Night Football game. You know his name, Le'Veon Bell. Yes, he was the bell of the ball last night, rushing for 204 yards as the Steelers beat the Titans in Nashville, Tennessee. The Michigan State alum also scored a touchdown en route to the highest yardage game for any running back this season. Now, Ben Roethlisberger commented on Bell's heroic performance, saying, quote, "When 26 gets the ball in his hands, you never know what's going to happen, and it's awesome," end quote. Now, Bell had been in a slump, rushing for just, get this, 205 yards in last five games before his breakout game on Monday night. But, man, did he break out. And it's kind of a quasi moment for me because I was going against Le'Veon Bell last night in fantasy football, And yeah, you can imagine I lost. All right, 24th ranked Michigan beat Bucknell Bison 77-53 last night. Senior Max Bilfit had a career night for the Wolverines, scoring 18 points, 7 of 9 shooting. Zach Irvin and Derek Walton Jr. helped out on offense as well, contributing 23 and 15 points respectively towards the Michigan cause. Now, Michigan's next opponent is Detroit UD, who they face on Thursday night. Tip-off is set for 6 p.m. at the Chrysler Center, and the game will be televised by the Big Ten Network. Well, that wraps up your current sports quick hit headliners for this November 18th. If you want to call in and give your thoughts on any of those, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Shoot us a comment there or shoot me a tweet at AlMartinWKAR or at our official Current Sports Twitter page of at WKAR_sports. Hey, folks, well, let's get this baby started. Again, as I just mentioned, in just a moment, we're going to invite our guest here on Current Sports. You know, we always have coaches on the show who have just come off a big victory, a big win, and are advancing to move on deep into the postseason or in their next just regular season game. But rarely do we have a coach coming off a loss on our show to talk about the loss, but to sort of capitalize a season. But we're going to do that today, considering as though Mason football, I tell you what, they had one of the most memorable years in all of their program's history. We'll tell you why, and we'll invite the head coach of that program, Coach Jerry Van Havel, to Current Sports in just a sec. It's going to be Jerry's first time on our show. I'm certainly excited about that. Also, later on in the show, it seems as though all of the talk from here on out up until, you know, December, when this whole fiasco is settled and we know who the top four teams are, we're going to be talking about it and debating about it, which teams deserve to be in the playoff, which teams don't, and give you our thoughts and predictions. So we're going to have a special Top 4 Tuesday. Of course, we regularly do a Top 5 Tuesday in sports, but today we're going to do a Top 4. Who's in the college football playoff right now? Who are the top four teams in college football? So we're going to give our thoughts and predictions on that, and hey, if you disagree, if you agree, or if you just plain old want to give your thoughts on who should be in or out, pick up that phone and dial 517-355-9527. And yes, we will also talk about Adrian Peterson. An interesting story. We've been chatting about this one, a little bit here and there from when this story first broke about Adrian Peterson disciplining his child and sort of going a little bit overboard. You could see evident marks on his child, and child abuse charges were filed, and he was let off, though, let off on a misdemeanor, didn't have to serve any jail time. But the NFL, seeing as done, I really think this thing was so just kind of sparked by Adrian Peterson not even showing up to the meeting this week with the NFL to discuss, you know, if he will be able to play this entire year. I think the NFL got a little irritated. Roger Goodell got a bit irritated, and they decided, no, you're not playing then, son. So we'll dive into that one as well. And also, we'll be talking a little MSU and Duke men's basketball. Big game tonight as Michigan State, again, they looked a bit shaky against Navy. But again, I mean, how much can you harp on it? Because it is the beginning of the year. It is the first game of the season for Michigan State. This team is missing a lot of pieces from what it had last year. Guys like Gary Harris, Adrian Payne, Keith Appling. I mean, those three components more so now being, you know, lost from this team now. Of course, they would take a step back. But, yeah, hey, you're still expecting a big game against Navy. You know, a Tom Izzo coach team just doesn't struggle against teams like that, right? Well, wrong. They certainly did. There were some holes needless to say, throughout that one. So we'll dive into what to expect now from a top five team, actually the number four ranked team in all of college basketball, the Duke Blue Devils, Coach K and company, going against Tom Izzo. And it's interesting because if you look at the record that Coach K has had over Tom Izzo and the Michigan State men's basketball team, Coach K is actually 7-1. Yes, a pretty much impeccable record against the green and white. So, can Tom Izzo shake that bug off and avoid going 8-1? Hey, we'll debate and talk about the Spartans and what needs to exactly be done for this team to have some success. Alex Shark, how you doing, my man? Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday, Al. Yeah, we got an interesting game tonight against Duke. I don't know if they're going to do it.
You don't think so? If so, you had to give a prediction right now, because I tell you what, Michigan State's the heavy favorite in this game right now, and deservedly so. I mean, looking at how Michigan State has started the year against Navy, and you play a team like Duke, who has been rolling on all cylinders, this team looks very, very talented. I mean, yeah, the odds and favors on the eve of this one are certainly going to bold into the Duke Blue Devils side, without a doubt. It's going to be a fun game, though. We're going to dive into that one in just a sec, folks. And I want to get the listeners out there a chance to chime in on this one as well and to give their thoughts on the MSU men's basketball team and what do they think is going to happen tonight. Again, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Before we get to our guest, though, Alex, how about Le'Veon Bell, though? I mean, my goodness. I mean, watching him, it was like an old-school football game watching the Tennessee Titans and the Pittsburgh Steelers go at it. I tell you what, Mittenberger, he held his own last night. He definitely held his own against a stingy Steelers defense. He was able to pick apart, you know, that defense in multiple areas. Tennessee Titans had a nice little lead at one point, especially at the beginning of the second half. But then, man, oh, man, I mean, Big Ben and more specifically Le'Veon Bell just carried that team on their shoulders and poured that one out. You know, watching Le'Veon in college, Alex, I knew that he had a shot to be a good pro, but, man, I didn't know he was going to be this good. I mean, looking at him last night, I mean, you could easily just give Le'Veon the ball, and he was averaging about 8 to 10 yards per carry and not getting tired. Not getting tired whatsoever, just constantly feeding him. It reminded me when he was here at Michigan State when basically the Spartans' offense was get the ball to Le'Veon Bell and everybody else move out the way. Impressive stuff, Alex.
Yeah, no, Le'Veon Bell was a force to be reckoned with. And then, especially with the off-the-field thing at the beginning of the year, and then splitting time with LeGarrette Blount, him coming up, him making a statement. The Steelers are going to be probably a playoff team, though, Al, and they're scary looking in.
Yeah, I think they are. I definitely think they are. But they do have lapses where they just their offense kind of just goes cold. Le'Veon, I don't think you can work him like you did last night for, you know, every single game from here on out to end the NFL season. But, I mean, I tell you, he is one durable back. And, yeah, you know, I am a little salty. I'm a little salty, folks, because I tell you what, I watched that game from the beginning to the end. Of course, flipping back and forth between my Detroit Pistons and in that game, in the Monday Night Football game. But I am up 20 points in pretty much the only fantasy football league that I care about. I'm in three of them. Two of them are just for fun. This one is for moolah, okay? Big moolah. And I'm sitting here like, okay. All right, I'm up 20 points. He's got Le'Veon Bell playing and also the Pittsburgh Steelers kicker, Sturgis. And Sturgis got him 8 points. You know, he kicked a few field goals. He had like a 40-plus yarder early in the game. I'm like, okay, I still got a nice little cushion here. Then all of a sudden, my lead just started dwindling and dwindling. And on like the second from last carry that Le'Veon had, that's when I lost the game, lost my mind, threw my iPad down and said, okay, I need to go take a nap or something. I'll go to bed right now because, So it's kind of a mixed feeling for me. I'm happy for Le'Veon. He's an unbelievable kid, unbelievable player when he was at Michigan State and is having an incredible start to his hopefully long and storied career as a running back in the NFL. Fun stuff for Le'Veon. But, hey, Le'Veon, you beat my fantasy team, so I'm a little salty about that. And a funny story here. I don't know if you guys saw this, but just hours after having – you know, one of the biggest games of his life, Pittsburgh Steelers running back, of course, Le'Veon Bell, he wasn't done showing off his moves, okay? I don't know if you guys saw, and this is all over TMZ. I saw it in a few other media outlets. But Le'Veon was caught cyber flirting with the pop star singer Jordan Sparks after the game. How about that? That's pretty fun. Now, Le'Veon, he played out of his mind, of course. 204 yards against the Titans. And, you know, Jordan Sparks is a huge, huge football fan. And she posted, quote, Le'Veon Bell is such a beast. Titans D cannot contain him. And then she posted Le'Veon's stat line, again, adding beast after it. And Le'Veon saw it. You know, and he, I guess he tweeted back. Let me see here. What's the tweet say? He says, quote, I see Jordan Sparks like the way I played last night. Then, you know, he put like a blushing face and a smiley face. So how about that? Le'Veon is living it up, my man. Live it up, Le'Veon. Live it up, Le'Veon. That's great stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's just so impressive, though, to see, you know, just because I always wonder how his style of play would transition into the league. And I tell you what, you're not getting him down with one guy. You got to throw multiple guys at him. And seeing as though, looking at Le'Veon, I mean, he has lost a lot of weight, too. It has made him more elusive. Oh, man, he's going to be special for years to come, folks. So a special moment for him on the primetime stage of Monday Night Football, too. So how about that? All right, well, let's get to our guest for today's Current Sports. I am certainly excited about this one, folks. Now, they are a football team that, despite falling in the Division III regional last week to Orchard Lake St. Mary's Prep, they accomplished a season of success that hasn't been matched in the program's history, okay? Now, Mason turned a lot of heads, a lot of heads, had mine spinning like crazy when they beat fellow CAAC Red rival DeWitt in districts, advancing to that regional game. Now, it was Mason's first ever district championship, and on today's Current Sports, we have the privilege of welcoming the general of the Bulldogs, head coach of the Mason football team, Jerry Van Havel. Jerry, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks. Thanks for having us on.
Exciting to have you on, my man. Now, again, now earlier this year, you guys had lost to DeWitt. I want to go back to that game because, again, it was such a huge moment. Because I tell you what, previewing the football playoffs here on the show, on the eve of when it started, Jerry, I mean, hey, we had a few teams here, you know, that listing left and right that we thought would make it to Ford Field. DeWitt was certainly one of those teams, seeing as though, I mean, they were undefeated going into the postseason. You guys lost to DeWitt 25-10 earlier in this season, and you called it after the win over DeWitt, quote, a blessing in disguise after beating them for that district title. Can you talk about why you believe that, Jerry?
Well, I think, you know, mostly the first time we played DeWitt, I'm not sure our kids truly believed that we could win. You know, we prepped our kids. We had a great week of practice. We played really hard, but I'm not sure in the back of our minds every kid believed we could really win for sure. And we walked off the field. We went into film. We realized, you know, we played them pretty tough. They did control the game. They did dominate the game. But we were in the game, and our kids realized, you know what, if we get better, we have a shot to beat them. And so really, throughout the rest of the season, you know, we weren't really expecting a rematch with DeWitt, to be honest with you, but we just tried to get better each week. And I know coaches all say that. It sounds like coach speak, but it's not. It's just true. Our kids really worked hard, and we did improve each week. And consequently, at the end, we had another shot at them. Our kids were excited about it. They wanted to play DeWitt again, and I think it was a great opportunity for us, and things all came together at the right time.
Now, Jerry, you talked about that first game that you played DeWitt and seeing some quote-unquote signs that, okay, we were in this game, there are some things that we may need to tweak here and there, and it will put us right in position to beat DeWitt if we played them again. What specifically were those signs that led you to those thoughts?
Well, I think the main thing was the emotional situation with our kids, that they realized that they could play at that level. And, you know, understand, these kids have been really successful in lots of different sports, and these have been some very successful football classes for us, too, at the younger levels. And so they're used to competing at a high rate. And, you know, we got off to a slow start. We weren't playing our best football early in the season, and they just kept working and things and got better. But I think in general, though, with DeWitt, I think, you know, we defended them a little bit better the second time around, and we did a better job offensively moving the ball. We really struggled the first time around. We just couldn't move the ball either on the ground or in the air. We really struggled that way, and our defense was pretty solid the first time, but we just couldn't score points.
Now, Jerry, I got to ask this. Did winning that district title mean even more, considering the fact, of course, as I just talked about, I mean, DeWitt was certainly a big, big favorite to get back downtown Detroit and play on the Ford Field turf. Did it mean even more, considering that it was against such a great team that Rob Zimmerman has against the DeWitt Panthers, and a team, again, that many had high expectations for?
Well, I think so. You know, we really respect Coach Zimmerman and really respect the DeWitt program. I mean, you can't ignore what they've done and the number of trips they've made to Detroit. You know, they've been highly successful, and they are very well coached. And they're a great team and great program. So certainly for us to beat them, you know, yeah, it is meaningful to us. You know, because the higher the stakes, the higher the challenge, the more meaningful the win. You know, so certainly it's meaningful to us. And now we have to look forward to next year and what we're going to do. Are we going to build on the success, or you know, what are we going to do? So we have work to do yet. So.
Now, Jerry, you all started the year on a bit of an up-and-down roller coaster, if you will. Now, you guys started with a loss to Okemos, beat Eden Rapids, then lost two straight games, and then all of a sudden, you know, something clicked. You went on a 7-week win streak. What exactly did click for this team?
Well, we played better, just better football in general. Fundamentally, we were better after the fourth game, and you know, those first four games, those are really good football teams. All four of those teams were very, very good, and we knew we had a tough schedule early. And after that, you know, we were better. Fundamentally, we blocked and tackled better. But the biggest thing is offensively, we were able to move the ball in chunks after game four. We started, you know, our passing game kicked in. Our kids were running great routes and catching balls, and that helped us a lot. And our running game really then fed off from our passing game. And really here it's always been the other way around for a long time. We've been sort of a run-first offense, but we really balanced up our offense after that, and we were able to score points, and that really took the heat off from our defense. So when we did that, that was really a key for us, and defensively we kept getting better as well.
Yeah, that's the key, just getting better week to week. And, you know, that's really the key to success when you talk about the ebb and flow of any season, for that matter, no matter what sport it is.
Right.
For you, Jerry, as a coach, I mean, what are the keys to coaching when trying to get your team to peak, hit that peak, right around playoff time to play your best football?
Right. Well, I think the first thing is kids have to be able to be in for the long haul. It is a long season, and, you know, human nature, sometimes kids are excited early in the season. They start to wane at the end of the season, especially if they're looking forward to their winter sport or doing something else. And so if you can keep it fun, keep it interesting, and keep it positive, kids feed off from that, and they get better. And when kids do see improvement, you get some good wins. That encourages more kids, and I think it's sort of a roller coaster, both good and bad. But I think a little bit of it's just the psyche of your team. You know, I think all high school coaches will tell you one of their main jobs is to be psychiatrist. You know, you gotta be in the head of your kids and how they're feeling and what's going on, and is there distractions in their lives outside of football, and you know, all the academic situations you deal with, and there's just so many things going on. You sort of have to keep them all in and all excited about football. And that's probably the biggest challenge of anything, is keeping everybody together on the same page.
You know? And how do you do that, Jerry? Because, again, you play so many roles as a football coach, and you have to balance so many things, so many vast areas concerning not only the lives of these players and how they perform on the gridiron, but off of it as well. Because I tell you what, the game is so mental. It is so mental.
Sure.
For you, Jerry, I mean, how do you approach that?
Well, I think for us here, I'm prideful in that. I think it's important. You need to develop a really good personal relationship with each player. And the better your relationship is with each player, and the more you know them and you know about their family and their likes and dislikes, and watch them do their other sports, wrestle or play basketball or baseball or whatever, and support the other programs, the more bridge you build between your players and you as a coach. And I think then at that point, that helps you keep kids motivated, because – you know them on a personal level, and it is personal. It's a personal thing for us as players and coaches to be a part of a team, and we're sort of all on the same level, you know, and I think that's important. And I think that when you build those bridges, it makes it easier on the tough days when you have a bad practice or a kid doesn't perform well or maybe gets himself in a little bit of trouble and you got to pull him in and talk to him. So I think having personal relationships with kids is really important, you know, and being personally invested in each kid.
Yeah, that is very, very true. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Today's Current Sports, we're talking with Jerry Van Havel, the head coach of the Mason Bulldogs football team. Now, Jerry, for you all, I mean, again, what an incredible run for you guys this year to win a district title. I mean, it's got to be pretty special from around that area. I saw some of the post-game video from when you guys had that win. You were pretty amped. I mean, the kids were saying, you know, this is arguably the biggest win in your program's history. I mean, just talk about this year. And was this the most talented team that you've ever coached?
Yeah, you know, we've had a lot of success. We've won lots and lots of league championships. We've won lots and lots of first-round playoff games, but we have struggled in the second round. We've gotten some really difficult draws over the years where we've looked at it thinking, geez, oh, man, we're 8-1 in the regular season or something like that, and we end up getting a draw that's really tough for us. And,
yeah.
But that's playoff football, too. You play who you draw. That's just the way that it is, so no complaints. But as far as where this team stacks up against other teams, I mean, it's like you know, asking a parent which child they like the best, you know.
Right,
you love them all, and this is a really good team. We've had lots of really good teams, so I don't know where they stack up. But I can tell you this: I tell you that they're quality kids, and I mean that sincerely. These are really good kids, and you know, I mean, I know a lot of coaches say that, and they love their kids, but we really do here, and so they're going to be real successful beyond football. But yeah, they're one of our better teams, but I don't know where they stack up with the other ones. But
Jerry, was there a specific moment that you can recall where you just had to step back and say, "Man, you know, this team could be pretty special if they want to." Was there any moment where you just kind of had to take a step back and say, "Wow, okay, I see something here"?
Well, I think all along we felt that that these kids could be better than we were at the beginning of the year. But I don't know if we really had a moment of anything like that. You know, you just go from game to game so much. You go back in the office and you watch film after a game, and then you immediately go to scout film and you go right on to the next thing. So as coaches, you get so little time to savor the good, and you're right on to work for the next week, right on prep work for the next team. So I don't know if we really had a moment, but I know that there was some key wins along the way. You know, going up to Hazlett, for example, Hazlett has a very good team and a very, very good young team. And to win at Hazlett was a real key for us to keep us going to get into playoffs. And so that was a moment that was really exciting for us, too.
Yeah, and you guys, you know what, moved on to play Orchard Lake St. Mary's Prep in the Division III Regional and fell, of course, 49-10. How did you and your team look at that loss? And was it a consolation prize getting there at all, or did the expectation suddenly shift into something greater on the eve of that matchup?
Well, I don't think there's any. I told the kids, you know, as a competitor, you should never accept defeat. You know, if you do, then you're just asking for more defeat at another time. You give yourself a personal out. And so there's no personal out. There's no, you know, moral victory or anything for getting there and having been defeated soundly. But it's a tough matchup for us, you know. We felt very good going in. We thought we would play them well. We had a shot to win. And to be honest with you, it sounds funny. We gave up a lot of yards and gave up a lot of points, but our kids actually did play quite well. We were very physical on defense. We were in the right spot. But, you know, you give away 40, 50, 60 pounds a man and a lot of speed. You know, all of a sudden you give up, you make a great play and you give up 7 yards, you know. So we had a lot of that in that game. And offensively, we struggled. It was tough. They were super fast and they covered great. They had great tacklers, and so it was tough to move the ball at all. And but yeah, you know, I mean, our kids are proud. Our kids conducted themselves with class. They played like great sports. And they played hard, and it is what it is. They're a better team than us that day, and they deserve to win. And we like to go back and play again another day, you know.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, Jerry, something so unique about this chat with you today is that we've had coaches on here, a lot of coaches on Current Sports, after winning a playoff matchup or a big game, but really never after a loss. I mean, what is the toughest part with coming to grips with a finished season, and what did you tell your team after that one?
Well, it's always the same. You know, I tell people the worst thing about the playoffs, the only bad thing about the playoffs is that the season ends in defeat for all teams except one. And it's immediate and it's final. You're playing like crazy. You're playing. You're hustling. You're working. All of a sudden, boom, the clock hits 4-0. Game's over. And you look at your seniors and, you know, it's all over, you know. And that's the toughest thing for me is you work with these kids since they're little guys, since they're in youth football. And you see them come through the program and you work with them in the middle school. And then you spend all those years training with them, high school, lifting, running speed, working. And all of a sudden, you know, they're great players as seniors. And then when that clock hits zero, it's over. Lights out. They're done. And so it's hard to see seniors move on, and that's by far the most difficult part of the end of the season. None of the rest of it really matters so much as the fact that our seniors are done and they're moving on.
Now, you talk about, you know, that personal connection that you share with the players that you've coached over the years. I mean, you start coaching them from youth football, get to see them grow as people, as a man. You know, years and years, as the years go by, and, you know, former players come back to you. I mean, what are those conversations like, and how close do you keep in touch with your players when it comes to life after football?
Yeah, that's a great question. We're so fortunate. We have so many former players that come back here, you know, stop in at practice, or in the wintertime they're in town from wherever they're living in the United States, and they stop in the weight room and say hi, or come in and work out with us lots. That's very common. The other day at the game, I had 5 or 6 former players waiting after we got done talking to the team. They're standing there. They had come in to watch the game. One of our players came in from Tennessee to see the game.
Oh, wow, Tennessee,
so,
man.
Yeah, so we have a lot of that, you know, and we see those kids around, and we have a lot of players coming through our youth program now that we coach their dads. So we have some second-generation players coming on now. So that's pretty cool to see, too.
Oh, boy, that is very, very cool. And when you do something like what you did this year, Jerry, I mean, do they ever talk to you about the pride that they feel coming through your, you know, being one of your players and coming through your program? And what do they talk about the success you guys had this year and what they feel as being a former Bulldog?
I think they do. You know, we get a lot of that discussion. It's kind of funny. I always tell players at homecoming or games like this, I say, you know, there's going to be lots of former players here, lots of alumni coming to watch you play. And they want to see two things. They want to see who's wearing their own number from back then.
Right.
And they want to evaluate if they were better than the person wearing the number or not.
Yeah.
And they want to be able to say if their team was better than the team presently, you know. So I tell the kids, I said, you got to play like crazy. So the guys that come back looking at your number realize that maybe you're better than he was, and hopefully our team's better too. So it's kind of a fun thing within the program that, you know, everybody's supposed to know who else wore their number in, you know, in Mason football history. I think it's important to have that legacy and know who's been in your shoes. And then sometimes those guys meet each other after the games. It's just kind of fun, you know. So
yeah, it certainly is. It's like a competition within the family, like big brother checking
right.
on little brother, right?
Right, absolutely. Yep.
Gotta love that. Folks, we're talking with Jerry Van Abel, head coach of the Mason Bulldogs football team. Now, Jerry, before I get you out of here now, how do you build upon the success of this year's team into next year's program?
Well, I think the first thing kids have to realize is they have to be understanding that they had some success for a certain reason. It's because of good fundamentals. It's because they played hard, they listened, they tried, and they got better. When you lose a group of seniors, especially good seniors like we have this year, it changes the dynamic of your football team in many ways, emotionally, physically. You know, you need new guys to step up. And I've always said one of the keys to good football teams, it's not the so-called stars. It's not the kids that everybody in the media and all the parents know are really good. It's that other kid that maybe is a junior that plays very, very little, but then steps up as a senior and plays a huge role. Maybe it's a quiet role, but they're a solid offensive lineman every down, the full go, you know. So those kind of kids need to step up, and we need to just rebuild, because when you lose seniors, it does change the dynamic of your team very much so. So we just got to reload and get going again, you know.
Yeah, certainly. That's a great mentality to have. Definitely, you know. And for you, you know, now the offseason is hit for you now, Jerry. I mean, do you take time to take a break at all, or do you immediately start prepping for next year right now?
Now we immediately start. We started lifting yesterday. And, right to it. Yeah, I mean, we give our kids a little bit of space. If they want to take a couple days or whatever, we say, you know, do what you need to do for a few days and come on back. But no, we had a weight room open yesterday, and we started lifting yesterday. And, you know, we'll just get right at it, because, I like to get back to work, and I think the kids do too. You got to let them heal up a little bit, because they're all busted up and sore. But, yeah, we just kind of get right back at it. So.
Oh, the grind never stops. Got to love that. Jerry Van Abel, head coach of the Mason Bulldogs football team. Hey, Jerry, what a season. Looking forward to see how you guys rebound off of it next year.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Jerry.
All right.
All right, folks, let's hit our first break. When we come back, we'll talk about the hardwood. Yeah, the Spartans and Duke Blue Devils get it on like Donkey Kong tonight at 7 p.m. on ESPN. We'll give you a preview of that matchup in seconds. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. Welcome back to the show. We're going to dive into some basketball. You know, Alex, I made a bit of a boo-boo during yesterday's show, my man. I mentioned that we will be giving away a pair of two tickets to the Michigan State and Notre Dame game on today's show. But no, that's actually going to be Wednesday's show. I apologize, good people. Yes, Notre Dame is one of the prolific programs in all of women's college basketball. They are nationally ranked. Of course, they produce some outstanding talent from year to year to year. One of the most recent names I can come up with is Skylar Diggins, who is really ripping it up in the WNBA right now. She came through the Notre Dame program. So it's a pretty big game, very big game, actually, for Michigan State, the women's basketball team, as they take on Notre Dame. That game will be taking place tomorrow night at 7 p.m., at the Breslin Center, folks, and we'll be giving away two tickets. Yes, one person will win two tickets. So you can take, you can go along with you, a friend, a family member, you know, your child. It doesn't matter. We'll give you the tickets right here on the air, but we're not just going to give them to you. You got to earn them, okay? We'll have a nice little trivia portion of the show for those that want to win those tickets and attend that game. So you don't want to miss tomorrow's show. We'll also invite Brian Callaway, MSU beat reporter for the Lansing State Journal. He covers the MSU women's basketball team. Does a fantastic job. Brian will be joining me on tomorrow's show to give a preview of that matchup and to talk about this year's women's basketball team. So you don't want to miss that. We'll also have coverage of that game. I'll be there with my intern, and we will be posting a report later on that night. So you don't want to miss all of that. But, folks, tonight, let's talk men's hoops, right? MSU playing Duke, the Duke Blue Devils. Boy, I tell you, they have a great team each and every year. They are always in the conversation of possibly going to a Final Four, of possibly winning a national championship, and this year is certainly no exception to those very statements. Number 19 MSU will take on number 4 Duke tonight. Again, 7 p.m. on ESPN and also ESPN3, which you can view the game online on your tablet or smartphone, whatever device you have. Again, the Blue Devils, I tell you what, they're bringing in 9 McDonald's All-Americans to Bankers Life Fieldhouse in Indianapolis. Of course, this is the Champions Classic. Going to be very interesting when looking at this one because Michigan State did not look polished whatsoever against Navy, folks. They really struggled, more specifically in the half-court offense, to find just any sort of rhythm, any sort of consistency from any player other than Travis Trice. Travis Trice was fantastic. He was actually named the Big Ten's Player of the Week, the first ever Big Ten Player of the Week, of course, on the start of the infancy of this Big Ten season. But Travis Trice was fantastic. He was fantastic. He seems to, again, you know, he has that killer three-pointer, which he's put on display against Navy. Again, tonight, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how Travis, how can he duplicate those type of efforts now? Because when you talk about this matchup tonight, it's going to be a tough one. How effective will Travis Trice be, you know, going against a guy like Tyrus Jones, the freshman? He is very, very impressive. Jones is a heck of a player. Actually, a player that Tom Izzo tried to recruit when Tyrus was nearing his senior year in high school. But Jones, he's a starter. He's 6'1". He's very strong. He's got a good first step. He can shoot the ball. He can drive. He is an uber dynamic guard, folks. And looking at, you know, from a point guard perspective, not only can the man score inside and out and put the drive on you, but he is very, very good at sharing the basketball. He has 12 assists in 2 games so far. 12 assists, folks. That shows that he is also getting others involved. Travis is going to have his hands full, Alex.
Travis is going to have a tough task with Tyrus, but at the same time, Travis has the experience. Travis has been in a lot of pressure situations, so I think he might have the edge. Now, for me, Al, for this game against Duke tonight, keep in mind that Michigan State is going on the road for 6 of its first 8 games. That's more than any team in the top 25 right now. So, Spartan fans, it might be a little rocky over the first 8 games. We'll see what happens. But down the stretch, Michigan State teams always come together. Don't throw it all away after watching the first 8 games. That's my advice because you're going to play Duke, maybe a Kansas team.
Yeah.
You're going to play some good competition coming up. So
that is true. So the question now, because it seems like Alex, you're kind of giving a, what's the word I want to use? I kind of think you're throwing in the towel a little bit more because you don't expect, it sounds like you don't expect MSU to be successful.
I'm not saying that I don't expect them to be successful. I'm just saying if the games get close, like the Navy game when it was a close game against a not ranked team, a team that hasn't beaten a good team since 1951, don't throw your arms up and freeze. You know what I'm saying, Al?
Okay, so you're prepping our listeners
I'm prepping for disappointment,
possibly.
It's going to be a bumpy road. Not even disappointment. They still might win.
Gotcha.
But it's going to be a little bumpy along the way. I mean, Izzo said it. They're still finding their stretches,
they
are. You know?
They certainly are. And I tell you what, this is a team that is, you know, looking at that first game, because that's the only sample size, a very small sample size that we have to analyze right now and pick apart. Again, it's only one game. We'll see how they rebound. We actually have a tweet here from TJ Segway, 40, and he tweets to WKAR Sports and also me at my Twitter page of at Al Martin WKAR. He is picking Duke tonight by, get this, 22 points. 22. He doesn't even think it's going to be close. Just Duke is going to romp on MSU right now. Ooh. Yeah, that's a big margin. That's a big, again, folks, if you want to weigh in on this, how do you think MSU is going to perform? 517-355-9527. 517-355-9527. Again, tweet me at Al Martin WKAR or at WKAR underscore sports. Alex?
Now, Al, You're big on the panic meter. You always have your own Al meter.
Yeah, I got my panic meters. Yeah, that's
so
true.
So tonight, would anything alarm you severely on the panic meter? Let's say they lose by 22. Is that an alarming thing for you?
Well, I tell you what. I do think Michigan State is going to lose this game first. Let me just get that out there. I think they're playing a much more, I guess you could say, talented team at this point in the season. Now, again, Michigan State's mantra, their basketball mantra, is to get better as the season goes on. A Tom Izzo team looks totally different from November to March. Totally different. And they will. This is going to be a season where that happens again. They will get better, without a doubt. But this early in the year, playing a team like Duke, a team who looks pretty much flawless so far. Now, there are a few wrinkles that certainly should be ironed out right now for this team, but it's still early. But they look much better than Michigan State based on Michigan State's first game. My panic meter won't go off, Alex, unless it's all about, for me, when looking at this game, it's all about how Michigan State loses rather than the loss itself. Because if they make it competitive, if they make it competitive and they grind the whole way and they put themselves in position to possibly pull out something special and get the win down the stretch, then I think this team is fine. But, again, if they get just blown out by 22 points, there are some questions that need to be answered about this team and some big holes that need to be filled. First off, I really think when looking at this matchup tonight, again, I think Travis Trice definitely has to bring it just like he did against Navy. He's going to have to improve defensively. He's going to have to be a very good on the ball defender because, again, Tyrus Jones has a very good first step. He's a very quick and savvy guard. And, again, folks, man, this kid's only a freshman. How about that? Quinn Cook is also another player who plays guard along with Tyrus Jones who could give MSU some problems. Quinn Cook, and it's interesting because Tyrus Jones, I mean, you know, Quinn Cook is listed as the shooting guard here and Tyrus is the point guard. But let's be honest here. They both play point guard. Quinn can run an offense like he did last year at point guard, and Tyrus can do just as the same as they've done in these first two games. So watch out for Quinn as well. He can also shoot the ball and be very dynamic. Again, one of the X factors to me that I wanted to see break out against Navy, who I came on the show and said, this guy is going to have a big game, watch out for him, is, you know who I'm going to talk about, Denzel Valentine. Denzel Valentine was relatively quiet throughout most of that game, in game one. He didn't look like himself. He didn't look like his jumper seemed a bit off, other than, you know, a three-pointer that he knocked down from time to time. He defensively, I thought he could have been better. Denzel Valentine was not the Denzel Valentine that I've been reading about in pregame reports and the Denzel Valentine that I saw on the heels of last year to end last season. So I look for him to break out. I think he's going to be playing with a chip on his shoulder to prove that, yeah, I'm one of the captains on this team, too, and I'm gonna prove it right now. So I think Denzel Valentine is going to wake up out of whatever spell he was in against Navy and be more of a factor on this offense. Brandon Dawson is a guy that I harped on as well, Alex, that ideally when it came to that half-court offense and why it was so stagnant, yeah, I think BJ takes a little bit of that blame as well as multiple other players because Brandon Dawson, there's question marks for me that I have for him as just how big of a threat he can be in the post with the basketball, not cleaning up rebounds and getting garbage points. We know Brandon Dawson is fantastic at that. He is a great garbage man. He is the expert of cleanup duty, folks. But can Brandon Dawson show that he can score with the basketball in a variety of ways? I don't know. That is a question mark for me. Also, when Brandon Dawson and this entire MSU offense is successful, They are successful when they get out on the break. Transition buckets are huge, and I do expect, and I saw in the second half more specifically, I saw Tom Izzo wanted this team to run. Coming out of halftime, Travis Trice tried to get the ball out on the break, Denzel Valentine as well. This team wanted to run. Navy just so happened to have some great transition defense to put a wrinkle in that plan, but for Michigan State, if they want to be successful to spark some offense, to spark early offense in this game, because they can't get behind early in this one, Alex, they got to get out on the break. And that's when Brandon Dawson is really at his best.
Yeah, no, they have to get out early. But at Navy, you kind of saw there. It was very explosive the first play of the game. Denzel hit that. He came off the screen to that elbow, hit a jumper. You saw the flashes of it, Al. It's not like Denzel was totally off the whole game. I would say in the first half, even maybe the first 10 minutes, Denzel had that confidence and that explosiveness. But yeah, getting off the start's important. You saw Michigan basketball last night get off to that early 10-0 run against Bucknell.
Yeah, they're playing Bucknell, though.
Yeah, but starting off early always helps, like you said.
That's eating cupcakes right there, man. That's sipping tea right there. But, yeah, I see what you mean, though. It's going to be really interesting because if you look at it, too, I mean, we haven't even gotten to Jahil Okafor. That's another question mark I have for this MSU men's basketball team, too. Jahil Okafor is another guy that Izzo went tough at. He wanted Jahil Okafor, man. There were talks about it. He was contemplating on coming here left and right, but, of course, he chose to go to Duke. I mean, Tom Izzo has to be frustrated, Alex, with just losing to Duke in so many areas. I mean, he's 1-7 against Duke. He's lost two guys in Tyrus Jones and Jahil Okafor in the recruiting war. I mean, my goodness, Tom Izzo has to be so frustrated. So there's already an incentive for him to come out here and coach his guys and to get a win here, a win that many don't expect Michigan State to pull out. But down low in the post, MSU has to show that they're not going to be pushed around. Matt Costello, Gavin Schilling, hey, even Marvin Clark Jr., they have to be on it defensively when going against this team because Jahil Okafor, man, is he a handful, folks. I mean, he is so athletic. He's so strong. I mean, this kid is good. He's really, really good. So this Michigan State has to be better on the inside defensively in guarding guys like Jahil. And I haven't even got to the bench yet. Duke's bench, I mean, they got a 7-foot guy in Marshall Plumlee. They have a 6'8 guy in Semi Olajewi. I think I'm saying his name right. I think I may have just butchered his last name. But he's huge, too, a guy that can definitely be a force down low. Man, Michigan State is going to have their handful. If they had to call it after giving that huge spill, MSU loses by 12 tonight.
Yeah, I think that most fans out there, how can you pick MSU? Most fans, I think, are thinking the same way. So, yeah, I'm going to say MSU loses as well by 14.
Yeah, and also hurts that, folks, we haven't even talked about Alvin Ellis. Alvin Ellis isn't even playing tonight.
Yeah, he's not even in.
He was a starter against Navy. And you know, just like that, you know, he gets that ankle injury. He won't play. If he does, if MSU has to use him, he'll just be kind of just a setup man, just out there as another body. But Ellis is out. I'm looking for Tum-Tum. Tum-Tum, man, he showed me a few things earlier in that game. Maybe he can have a breakout game today. And I'm looking to have a big game. If you had to choose an X-Factor, who would it be, Alex? For me, my X-Factor tonight is Gavin Schilling.
All right, yeah, I got to go with Brandon Dawson, man. The inside game, we're looking for it. A lot of the fans are looking for it, too. So I'd say the inside game from Brandon Dawson.
All right, well, there you have that, folks. If you still want to chime in on this game, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our second break. When we come back, we'll wrap up our show by talking about the college football playoff. Who are the top four teams in college football right now? We'll discuss, debate, and engage in just a sec. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin. The 12-member committee charged with determining the four teams to make college football's first playoff will release its latest rankings tonight. It will then release two others on November 25th. I'm sure you guys got this marked down in your calendars already. On November 25th and December 2nd before the final rankings, which will be released on December 7th. That is the Moolah Day. That is the day we find out and the debate ends as to who is in the college football top four, December 7th, folks. Those are really the only ones that matter in my book. But, you know, there's one that gets released tonight. And there's, you know, for me, I think the theme of tonight's college football, releasing of the playoff has to be who is in number four. Who is the quad, Alex? That's what I'm dubbing this. Because for me, there are three teams that you can pretty much guess are going to be in the top three. I think it's pretty safe to say, and you can debate with this with me, and if you disagree, but I think Florida State deserves to be numero uno. They're the only undefeated remaining team here in this whole thing, and they had a scare. They've had a few scares, actually. They had a scare against Miami.
Yeah,
Miami had put up a fight.
Miami, Clemson,
yeah,
Louisville.
Clemson put up a fight. But
do we need to go on?
Yeah, but the proof is in the pudding, baby. Hey, they haven't lost. They have not lost. They deserve to be number one. If you win, you know, like Al Davis says, just win, baby. Number one, Florida State.
Resiliency.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. No quarrels there. Oregon, I think, will be ranked either two or three. Because they did nothing to hurt himself on Saturday because they didn't play.
They did nothing to hurt himself.
They didn't play.
But compared to Alabama, who's done everything that they needed to do to get back in it.
And that's the other team.
That's the thing. I see Bama as number two, not Oregon.
That's why I say I think Oregon's going to be two or three. I don't know. Again, Oregon did nothing to hurt himself, so I don't know how you could take them out of it. And they are also a one-loss team, just like Alabama is. Their loss coming to Arizona. Alabama's, of course, they have that etch on their record. Now, Alabama, again, that's the third team that I think will be the other one ranked. They had a big, big win. Huge win. How about that win over Mississippi State, man? An impressive win.
Yeah.
A very impressive win.
They contained the Mississippi State 6'6" quarterback. They did what they needed to do.
Exactly. Over then, number one, Mississippi State. So that final spot is what everyone is talking about right now. And I'm looking on my Twitter feed here. Funny that we're having this discussion right now because ESPN Sports Center is saying, well, retweet. And they have a picture of Ohio State right now. Retweet if you think Ohio State should be number four when the new college football playoff rankings come out. And they have hashtag who is number four. So they're also, I guess, on the same page as I am as to who is going to be number four. Ohio State won't be number four. Let's just be real here. They're not going to be number four, man. But for me, there are a few teams that, you know, debatably deserve to be in at number four here. Now, Mississippi State, they did lose to Alabama of all teams. Let's just call it like it is. Mississippi State, a team that I think is very, very, very talented and arguably the best conference in college football in the SEC. You got to be crazy not to think that. So they did lose to Alabama, a very good team. So if Mississippi State is still in this running in the top four, in that number four slot, I should say, I wouldn't be surprised. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that at the end of the day, there might be two SEC teams in this college football playoff due to the level of competition. But for right now, as much as I hate to say it, I think TCU might claim that fourth spot, Al. I hate to say it, but I think they might take it.
I can see that as well. I could definitely see that as well. But the thing is, though, if you talk about TCU, you have to have a conversation about Baylor as well. Because Baylor is a team that, you know, has had a few big wins here and there. I mean, they beat Oklahoma, and they also beat the head-to-head matchup against TCU.
Right, exactly.
Baylor has beaten TCU. So if the Horned Frogs, if Texas Christian are in that number four spot, I wish I could be a fly on the wall to hear the reasoning. Because if you put TCU in there and not Baylor, why? You know, so I can see that too. So Baylor or TCU are two teams also that are in that conversation of being that fourth team. Now, I keep hearing this. Again, I want to just get this out of my system. Can we put to bed, please, that Ohio State deserves to be in the top four? I understand they had a big, big win against Michigan State. They had a convincing victory over one of the Big Ten's best against Minnesota. JT Barrett is playing out of his mind. This team could legitimately compete with all of the teams previously mentioned here on the show, without a doubt. But the fact that, again, it comes down to quality wins for me. You cannot lose to Virginia Tech. You cannot have a scare against Penn State and expect to be in this playoff.
Oregon had a scare, too. They lost to Arizona. They're not even in contention.
But come on. Come on now. Ohio State, really, if there was a team that was, again, if there was a team that was going to come out of the Big Ten, it was going to be Michigan State. I'm rooting for them. I'm rooting for Ohio State. Maybe the stars align and the moon shines and Ohio State is in this playoff. I want to see some Big Ten representation because there is the perception that the Big Ten right now is the fourth best conference in college football right now. That is the perceived notion when talking about the Big Ten. So if there is, and D'Antonio talked about today in his morning presser, D'Antonio said, yeah, I want to see Ohio State, if any team is going to make it now, at this point in the year, I'm rooting for Ohio State to possibly make the playoff. Will it happen? Let's be real here. I'm saying nah. uh-uh, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, yeah. There's just too many other teams with quality conferences that will get the nod. Al, I hear you on that. The only chance for Ohio State is if Baylor or TCU loses and one SEC team loses again. That's the only chance. So they're kind of the biggest if team that Detroit Free Press's own Drew Sharp often talked about in many different times of examples this year.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The Big Ten is the biggest if conference. TCU-Baylor, yeah, TCU did lose to Baylor heads up, and that will hurt them at the end of the day.
TCU has had some big wins, though. That's
right.
The thing about it.
But they also had some big wins, and they also have some very good players on their team that have a lot of national focus right now. Heisman candidate quarterback. Must we go on? So they have a lot of guys there that are on the national scene, just like Michigan State. Michigan State had a lot of national exposure. That's why they were ranked so high.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
For me, I think an SEC team at the end of the day will get that spot. But for now, I think TCU might get it, man.
All right. Well, we'll see. All right. If I had to choose in that final spot. So we're in agreement that FSU, Oregon, and Alabama are locks for the three
right.
That are in there.
And you said you want to hear there's a fly on the wall why TCU would get it. The mm-hmm. thing is, regardless if they lost to Baylor heads up, there's still teams, Oregon, in that top four that have lost to bad teams too. Arizona. Sure, Rich Rod has done a lot better with them this year, but they still lost heads up to Arizona.
Yeah.
Just because they lost to Baylor doesn't mean they're going to be necessarily out of the four for right now. I think they still have enough firepower to get the four spot.
Yeah, and that's the thing about Texas Christian. I think that they have enough quality wins to put them in that conversation, even though they did
right.
lose to
Michigan
Baylor.
State lost to Oregon, and
right.
they were still in the conversation.
But that's why this formula for these four teams isn't perfect, because I guarantee if TCU does end up making this 14 playoff, oh my gosh, Baylor fans are going to riot. They're going to be on 10 o'clock news in the middle of the streets protesting because they beat TCU. That, and they feel it always not fair. And I can see that perspective as well. So it's up in the air. You think TCU is going to be in? I think at the end of the day, I think Mississippi State will still be number four when it
okay.
comes out. So we'll see. We'll certainly see. Only time will tell. Another question I also want to hit on before we wrap up today's show. Which two lost teams possibly have a chance to sneak in? Because when you look
yeah.
at it, you know, if you start with Mississippi, which can still win the SEC if it wins its remaining games, including Mississippi State, Alabama loses to Auburn, Ole Miss will win the SEC West possibly. I mean, there's a lot of variables there. I think there's a possibility as the weeks go on to end the year, maybe a two-loss team may sneak in this thing.
Yeah, that's the thing. I think that at the end of the day, whoever wins the SEC will be in it.
Yeah.
Even if you're a two-loss team, if Ole Miss wins the SEC, they'll take that fourth spot without a doubt.
Yeah, certainly. Folks, what do you think about it? Go to our Facebook page. Leave us a comment at facebook.com/currentsports. I will read it during tomorrow's Current Sports. You can also tweet us at AlMartinWKAR or at WKAR_sports. And remind you all really briefly that there is no Current Sports TV taping this week due to the fact that we have a high demand. First off, we're getting ready for Silver Bells. Silver Bells in the City is coming, folks. Of course, WKAR, we produce that broadcast downtown Lansing. They light up the tree. It's a festive time. So we're prepping for that. And also, a lot of you really enjoyed the chat that we had with Ronald Mann, MMA fighter and amputee. Very touching and emotional moment on Current Sports TV. So if you missed it and want to check it out, we'll be re-airing that episode this Thursday night at 10 p.m. on WKAR-TV. Folks, we have a fantastic show in store for you tomorrow. Again, we'll be giving away a pair of tickets to enjoy the Michigan State and Notre Dame women's basketball game tomorrow night at 7 p.m. at the Breslin Center. You do not want to miss tomorrow's show to find out how you can go to that game along with a friend. You don't want to miss that, folks. We will also have Brian Calloway of the Lansing State Journal to join me on the show to give a preview of that very big game, an early test, a good early test for Susie Merchant and Company. Thanks so much to all of you for tuning in to this edition of Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR AM 870 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have a fantastic day and be easy, people.